Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
that presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com. Designed for work.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network.
So, Dick, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Glad to do it.
You know, I want to ask you actually why you do it. Like, you're running an enormous company. It's the oldest brewery in America, and the largest American-owned brewery in America, the largest privately owned brewery in America. You're a busy guy. Like, why do a podcast? I'm always curious about this.
Why do I do it?
Yes.
Listen, I started in 1958, and I remember the years that we were all but out of business. Actually, my father and his brother had the place sold back in the 60s, and they found out that the purchaser was going to scrap it, and then they didn't sell it to him. Well, thank God they didn't. But, you know, all the small breweries, there were so many coal region breweries back in those days in the 50s and 60s. Every town almost had its own brewery, and they were all going out of business at that time, and we were pretty close to it. And, you know, we hung in there. My dad and his brother bought the company in 1963 from my grandfather, who passed away at 80-some years old, so he was still running it. And you know what? They kept investing some money in it and kept the thing alive, and look what happened. You know, you give yourself a chance, and you never know what's going to happen. This craft beer craze, and Jim Cook with the Samuel Adams, and introduced people to better beers, and a guy like us, that's our portfolio.
But why, you know, now obviously you've personally grown it into a successful company, and we'll talk about into an enormously successful company. It's already been successful. It's been around almost 200 years. But like, why do a podcast? You're obviously incredibly busy. Why come on my show?
Because you asked me, that's why.
Okay, good.
Anybody's show. I go
Thank
on
you.
The Johnny Carson show if he's still at it.
Thank you. Well, I really appreciate that. Well, here's there's a couple of questions I want to ask you, but you brought up something very interesting. Your dad bought the business from your grandfather. Now, that's an unusual statement. I don't know if people kind of caught that, but most of the time, children inherit businesses from their father. So why did they, and I know you bought from your father too. So this is like a family tradition. Why did your father buy from your grandfather? Why did you buy from your father as opposed to inheriting the business?
Because Jim, it generally comes out of an estate, and you know, the if he's the owner of the brewery, the money that he would generate goes into his estate, and the other members of the family are entitled to something out of that. And I see it the same way. So there's a valuation on the brewery from the government, and you know, it's part of his estate, so you have to pay tax on it, and so somebody's got to pay that. So when you buy it, it goes into your estate eventually, and the same thing will happen to me if I cash in, and the company will go into my estate, and one or two of my children will buy it, and that's the way it works.
I see. So it's kind of like for tax planning purposes. So your family can have control over what happens instead of saying outside forces having control over it.
Well, no outside forces would, because we're not. I own 100% of the stock in the company, and eventually my children will too.
Now, there's this saying, shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations, meaning, you know, somebody will start a business, their son will continue it, and then the third generation will usually ruin it. But now your daughters will be the sixth generation running this business. The business was started in 1829, and your daughters will be the sixth generation. How did your family in general kind of keep the work ethic going to keep this business alive?
Well, I can't speak for the past members of the family because they're not here anymore, but everybody took an interest in it, apparently, just like I did. I mean, I wanted to be involved in the brewery from the time I was 16, 17 years old. I was fascinated by it. I thought we had great products. Even though we were struggling, we were up against such stiff local competition to try to remain financially solvent. But, you know, somebody always picked up the ball and took over the company. And it goes back to my great grandfather and my grandfather who bought it when he was. He was a freshman at Princeton when his father passed away, and he came back and took over the brewery. I don't think he ever did graduate from Princeton. And, you know, he ran it from 1899 till 1963 when he passed away, and my father and his brother both worked at the brewery. I mean, it was dismal times at that time, but they had enough character and interest in the company to take it over and keep it alive. And, you know, I don't know what I'd have done if they would have sold it. But
wow.
We got very lucky in the 1980s, late 1980s, 1990. I won't say we were lucky, but we were in the right place at the right time, which I guess is luck. And we had good products, and you know, we went from 137,000 barrels when I bought it to we should be close to 3 million barrels this year.
And that makes
just
you
me now, Jim. It's not just me. It's all the people that work here. You feel this is a small coal region community, and people depend on this company for their livelihood. And there's people that have built us and put us into the position that we're in today. Our salespeople, our COO, Dave Casanelli. We got very fortunate that I got good people in here.
Well, it's interesting though. How do you, like, in a family business, one challenge is to keep good employees incentivized because they know they're never going to be the CEO. They know they're never going to run the whole business. How do you keep employees still feeling like creative and innovative and wanting to grow within the business?
Well, you pay them. Pretty simple. You know, they're a part of this, and, I think they take ownership to their jobs, and they have a good product to sell. We treat them like part of the family. We try to.
That's great. So now, 1899 to 1963, you said your grandfather ran the business. That's 64 years. That's a long time to do one thing. Like,
yes.
Do you think he ever got bored? Like, did he ever sort of wander off into the caves and do something else?
Well, he did. Don't forget, he went through the Prohibition period. And
What did you do during that period?
We kept operating. We kept the brewery operating. And in 1920, he built a creamery, a dairy across the street, and he made ice cream and sold milk. And one of his sons that wasn't involved in the brewery took that over eventually, probably in the 30s or early 40s somewhere. I don't know what year it was, but somewhere around there, he bought the dairy from my grandfather, and he ran a very successful ice cream manufacturing company. My grandfather also got involved at that time. You're talking about the Roaring Twenties. Dance halls were becoming very prominent, and he invested in dance halls in Philadelphia, Reading, Pennsylvania. In New York, he was a partner in Roseland. which most people don't remember anymore. I don't even know if it's still open. But
oh no, I used to go there. This is like in the 90s. I would go on dates there. There would be music playing and you dance.
Okay. Well, the girl that owned it at that time in the 90s was the daughter or granddaughter of my grandfather's partner, and I think her name was Betz, B-E-T-Z, but I'm not sure. She still owned it back in the 1990s. Now, you know, that's what he did. He had an investment, and he eventually sold his shares out probably before the 1929 when the market crashed. He's a very smart businessman. He was a smart guy. He invested in real estate and also the dance halls, the dairy. So he did do some diversification. He was also president of a local bank. So he was into different things, and probably prohibition forced him into it.
Yeah, interesting. So that kind of kept the variety going. In some sense, that's probably the way you avoided the shirt sleeves expression was by keeping variety in the business.
That's right. No, that's correct.
Now, even you left the business for a while. You went and formed a distributorship for a while. Like, what was going on between you and your dad that you didn't stay fully at the business while he was still running it?
Well, I was pretty forceful, and now I was a kid at the time. You know, I was in my 20s, and I wanted to modernize the brewery. I felt we had a chance for survival, and I wanted to modernize the brewery and make it run more efficiently. And you know what? In all fairness to him, he didn't have the money to do a lot of the things that I wanted to do. The funny thing is that after I left, he did the things I wanted him to do. So we didn't see eye to eye on how we wanted to keep the company alive. But, you know, I don't blame him. Anybody can spend somebody else's money. And that's basically what I was asking him to do, was spend money to modernize the brewery and make it run more efficiently. Now I'm doing that on my own.
I don't know. This is a naive question because I don't know much about breweries, but how do you modernize a brewery? Like, what was going on? What did you want to spend the money on?
Well, first of all, we did everything by hand in those days. We loaded trucks, unloaded trucks by hand. It was almost all returnable bottles. It was everything from 7-ounce returnable bottles to quarts. We had 12-ounce returnable, 16-ounce returnable bottles. And it was just a very inefficient operation in that we were handling everything by hand. And I wanted to build a warehouse in an area that we had and palletize the operation so we could load distributors and customers with forklifts rather than by hand. And, you know, he was one of those people that said, well, we've always done it this way, and you couldn't get him away from that. Today we do, we wouldn't be here today.
Well, when you bought the business, though, it was like, not that it was in danger of going out of business, but you definitely bought it at a low point in 1985. Like, do you attribute that a little bit to his reluctance to kind of modernize fast enough?
Well, he was making money. He was keeping his head above water financially in the mid 80s when he got sick. He got Alzheimer's, and that's kind of why he got out of the business. And I'm a production nut. I mean, I enjoyed working in the packaging operation, and I saw that we had to run our products at higher speeds. More and more people were buying cans. I wanted to get a bigger and more modern can filler and run cans at a greater speed. When I started there, we were running cans at 210 cans a minute. Today we're running, in Florida, we're running 1,200 a minute. Up here, we're running 900 cans a minute. And that's 36 cases per minute that you were getting off the machines. And that's by industry standards, that's not really that fast, but it's as much as our plant can handle. And you can't do any better than, you know, what you can make in a day. We can't make that much beer in a day.
Well, it's funny, you know, Yuengling beer is, again, I guess you're the largest privately owned brewery in America. How do you stay such a cult favorite and at the same time be a mass favorite, like you're the largest? So it's kind of an interesting, not too many companies are both cult and mass.
It's kind of a simple answer. We make good beer. And, we had a brewmaster here when I took over in 1985. He had been here since the end of the Second World War. And
wow.
He just had old brewing standards, cleanliness, good products. He sampled everything, made sure it was proper, tasted proper, properly going out in the marketplace. And today, I mean, he's gone. In the 90s, he retired and eventually passed away. But he set the standards by which we still operate today, is the easiest way to put it. The other thing is, you say, how do we maintain our cult? Well, good beer is one thing. The other thing is, all the national brands, who are 85% of the beer sales in the United States, which is Bud, Miller, and Coors, are all internationally owned. And I think the consumer realizes that. Another 10% of the beer business is foreign-made beer, your Coronas and Heineken and whatnot that comes into this country. And I think people respect the fact that we've stuck it out and we're family-owned and operated, and my kids understand that. We have a museum and gift shop, and we have tours in the old brewery, and people are just enthralled when they come in and go through the plant. I mean, it's an old coal region brewery, and it's a very good one. It's small, but it's very good. We'll put almost 500,000 barrels out of there this year. They see the caves that they dug back in the 1829, 1830 era. To store the beer. I mean, remember we started before there was even electricity. Everything was done by gravity. And people come in and see that. And I think that's a big piece of our selling point, is the fact that we've survived with such an old plant through all these years.
You know, beer is sort of a funny industry because, you know, arguably it's one of the oldest industries in history. Like there's a theory that society was domesticated because we needed to learn how to harvest wheat for beer, not the other way around. So like beer essentially created modern civilization. So it's like you never have to worry about going out of business.
Well, I don't know about that, but the big guys are really clamping down on us. You have a very difficult time sometimes getting your beer to the consumer through your wholesaler network, and through a consolidation, there's not a lot of wholesalers left to go to market your product. Our brand does happen to be one of the products. Close to our size.
So wait, I missed that last part. So if the distributorships decide that they're not going to carry you anymore, does that put you in trouble, or can you own a distributorship?
No, we wouldn't want to own a distributorship. That's their job. We give them our brand and we expect them to go sell it. And sometimes it just gets to be a problem because they're focused on maybe the Budweiser brand or Miller Coors or some of the imports. And it's just difficult to get and keep their attention to market our product. It does sell, you've got to get it on the shelf for the consumer. And we struggle with that in some cases, not in all cases.
You know,
there's some guys that do very well with our brand. Our brand's very profitable to a beer wholesaler and to a retailer.
You know, it's funny because you're so focused. I mean, in a day of, right now everybody goes to get their MBAs and then they want to kind of expand globally all over the place. For 200 years, you've been on the East Coast. Like you went from Pennsylvania to slowly the rest of the East Coast. Why don't you expand nationally? You're already the largest. You would be like 10 times the largest.
Well, capacity issues. I mean, we don't jump into things and build or build or buy a 5 million barrel brewery, because we don't feel that we're going to get to that kind of market share that would warrant that. You know, transportation's a big thing in any industry today. To get your product to the consumer, if you're selling beer in Colorado, it probably costs you $3,000 a truckload, or maybe $3 a case to get it there, and it puts our brand out of our price range where we want to sell it at. We want to try to play financially, price-wise, with the national brands. And at our size, it's very difficult to do it, but we do it through what I talked about before, efficiencies.
So why don't you buy or build a brewery in Colorado, for instance?
Who's going to run it? You have a very difficult time getting people to run a brewery of say, 1.5 million barrels or 2 million barrels. That's basically why.
You couldn't, like, for instance, poach someone from Miller or Sam Adams or whatever? You couldn't get one of those guys who's already an expert?
You probably could if you really searched, but, you know, we don't have to be the biggest. You know,
right.
That's not our goal. Our goal is to be profitable, to be able to invest in our company. Going back into 1999, we were growing tremendously, and we only had the one brewery, the old plant, and we were strapped for capacity. We're landlocked. We don't have any room to build. So we made the decision to build a new plant about 2 miles from the old plant, in Pottsville, Pennsylvania. And at the same time, the Stroh family decided they were going to get out of the brewing end of the business, and they had a plant available in Tampa, Florida that we bought. It was 1.5 million barrel capacity, and everybody thought I was nuts for buying it. And you know what? It supplemented our production to keep us supplied, to keep our customers supplied up in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, which is about all the further we were in those days. So as time went on, we got the new brewery going, and then we started to expand our marketing area. But when we expand in adjacent states. So we go from Pennsylvania to Maryland to Virginia to the Carolinas, and we work north from Florida and Alabama and Georgia out of Tampa. That was our plan, and we never varied from it. So that's why we really don't open a whole lot of new markets.
What do you think your daughters will do differently than you? So your daughters are going to take over after you.
I don't know.
Are you scared?
I think they understand why we do what we do. They're both very focused on their jobs in the brewery. One's in administration, the other one's in order services and production. She figures all the production. She gets the orders from the wholesalers, and then she puts our production venues together up here in Pottsville, and they do a good job with it. And they're doing a great job in the fact that they understand that we have to have our product. And, you know, if we start getting really busy and we get a big market share in a given market, it's difficult to fulfill the demand for our product sometimes. So, you know, they're not going to want to build a brewery, I don't think. If they want to, that's up to them. Every generation has its own goals and what they think they can do with the company. I just don't want to see them make a mistake.
So I kind of the takeaway I'm kind of getting is you sort of found your ideal place where you could have a monopoly, which is basically the Eastern United States, bit by bit. You never went out there and tried to overextend and battle competition. You tried to stay away from the competition so you can focus on being profitable in the areas that already loved you, as opposed to kind of stretching past your boundaries.
That's correct. That's pretty much correct. We tried that in a fashion that when we bought the Tampa facility, and people really don't know who we are when you get into markets that are far away from home. We couldn't even get a wholesaler in the state of Florida to talk to us. We got a couple of small guys down there, and they kind of raised their eyebrows, and I told them what I think they could sell, and you know what? What I told them came true, and eventually they got bought out by larger wholesalers, and now they're enjoying the fruits of our investments.
Well, did you ever feel like selling out? Like I read somewhere that your stake in Yuengling Beer is probably worth over $1 billion. Like clearly it might be fun for you to sell out at some point.
I have no plans, and I didn't work all these years to sell it. That's and that number is strictly a figment of somebody's imagination. Nobody ever came in and offered me that kind of money, and I wouldn't sell it anyway. And I think people realize we're not for sale. Kind of frustrates a potential buyer, though.
Yes. Do you get the calls?
Well, I've had inquiries, yeah. I've had inquiries from people. I mean, a lot of it's capital investment groups, and they know we're doing well, and they know that there's a certain value to our name and the fact that we're America's oldest brewery. They know that there's great potential there. They probably wonder why we don't want to be a national brand, and I don't think we don't have to be a national brand.
I think that's a hard thing for entrepreneurs to realize, that they don't have to do everything.
That's exactly right. We don't need it all. We're fine where we are. We want to grow our market share in existing markets. There's a long way to go. We only get like a 3 to 5 to 8 share. Maybe in Pennsylvania we're a 10 share of market. And we're not as big in the markets that we're in as people think. But we're growing, and our position is we want to grow further. We've got the tools to do it. We've got the name, we've got the products, and we have opportunities to grow in our existing markets. So why do we want to go out to St. Louis and go eyeball to eyeball with the Budweiser brand in Missouri?
Yeah, it's interesting because Peter Thiel, who's the founder of PayPal, he was on my show a few months ago, and he basically said that competition is actually bad for capitalism because capitalism is about making profits and competition takes away the profits. So if you're an entrepreneur, try to do everything you can to become a monopoly in your area as opposed to compete with everyone else. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Well, we're anything but a monopoly. I mean, at that market share, we're not a monopoly.
If anything,
Anheuser-Busch Company is a monopoly. They have almost 50% of the nation's beer business. The fact is that they're internationally owned because the Bush family isn't involved anymore, which was kind of startling to me. But it's the way it worked out. And the Miller's owned by South African breweries out of London, and Coors is now run by the Molson Company out of Canada. So, here we are standing here, a small brewery in Pottsville, Pennsylvania, that's the largest American-owned brewery in the country.
So when the Bush family sold, did you, like, call them up and say, hey, what are you doing? Like, were you guys all friends?
Well, I never met the Bush family.
Really? You guys are the main players in this space? You've never, like, there was never, like, a big beer party?
No, they were so much bigger than us. I don't think they knew we existed, but to my knowledge, I've never met them. I never met August or his son, and they were an iconic company, and it was just strange to see that happen to them. The takeover by InBev, and now the company's run entirely different than the way the Bush family ran it. They were very good at running their breweries. Those guys make good beer. I mean, there's nothing wrong with their products. It's just that they want it all, and that's not the position we take.
How are their breweries run differently now?
Well, there's a lot less people there. I mean, you'd have to interview some people from St. Louis to see how what I'm talking about. But there's a lot of people that were there for a lifetime, and they're not there anymore.
So part of again, what I'm seeing is a takeaway is part of what has allowed you guys to go past the shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves phenomenon is in three generations is loyalty to the people who are working there. You've kept people there. You've kept families there essentially for 200 years.
basically, that's true. You know, I have sons of daughters of people that used to work here when I started.
Did you ever feel like when you were like 18? Did you ever feel like, oh no, I'm not gonna fulfill this, you know, almost destiny for me. I'm going to go off and be a stockbroker or a Wall Street guy or something like that.
I never had the education or the interest in doing such a thing. I was always focused on the brewery. I went to high school locally, and when I in the summertime I worked at the brewery. After high school, I tried college. And I come home and work at the brewery in the summertime. And as time went on, I quit college and focused on the brewery. And that's when I ran into trouble with my father, and I ended up in the Army for a six-year stint in the reserve unit. But that was okay. It was a great experience. I admire what these kids are doing today in the service. So, I mean, I had my battles with my father, but ultimately I ended up getting what I wanted, which was running the brewery, and everything seems to have worked out so far.
You know, it's funny about, like, you mentioned the service and what these kids are doing today in the service. And I know you were a delegate for George W. Bush at one of the Republican conventions. But now, how do you feel? Barack Obama, his favorite beer is Yuengling beer. Like, he sent a case of your beer to the Prime Minister of Canada. Like, it's across politics.
There's no reason he shouldn't want to promote our products. As I said, it's American owned, and that he should be promoting our products.
Yes,
we appreciate it, but he doesn't have to.
What prevents you from, say, now that you, like, the hardest thing when starting a new drink is getting shelf space in the stores, but you've got the shelf space. So what stops you from, let's say, bottling water or going into some other drink to expand that way? You know, so not necessarily expanding horizontally, but vertically.
We don't need to. I'm focused on the beer industry, and there's people in the water business. Nestle, Coca-Cola's in the water business. We don't want to play against them. They stay out of the beer business, and we stay out of the water business. Is basically what my philosophy. Let them alone. We don't have to be all things to all people. Right, we just want to make good beer and survive. That's all.
So like, for a beginning entrepreneur, I feel like many entrepreneurs start off and they kind of want to make a product that everybody in the world is going to use. And sometimes that works, like Facebook or Google, but often it fails. And I think people don't have your attitude where, let's find something really good that a few people will use and love, and then we could build from that point.
Well, at the start of our conversation, you said beer's been around for, you know, the Mesopotamians, I think, discovered beer. The Chinese years and years, centuries ago, discovered beer. So hopefully it'll be around forever. And I just happen to land in a business that it's a beverage of moderation. You don't have to drink it all in one day or one sitting. And we make a good product, and we can survive very, very well doing what we're doing.
And as far as you know, the daughters will continue the tradition. They won't. As far as you could tell, they probably won't sell the business. They'll just keep going, keep working at it.
I have 9 grandchildren. They're all 12 years old on down. So I don't have anybody really ready at that level to come into the brewery, but hopefully they'll realize what they have here, and the children of my children, brewery someday. I probably won't be around when that happens, but I might be. You know?
Yeah, you never know.
And that's right.
You know, how have you enjoyed the fruits of your labor? Like, obviously, you've worked very hard for a long time. How do you, you've been very successful. How do you enjoy it?
Well, I enjoy working. I enjoy seeing the people come in and going through on the tour and how enthusiastic they are about our brand. I don't think any other brewer really enjoys enjoys it as much as I do due to the fact that we're around 185 years. And, you know, that speaks for itself. There's a lot of new players in the beer industry, and, you know, they're doing well. Craft craze is interesting to me, and I wish all of them well. I mean, there's, as I said before, three brewers control 85% of the beer business in the United States. So there's a lot of room for guys like us, even at our level of just below 3 million barrels. There's a lot of room for new customers out there, and hopefully we get some of them.
So one final question, which is more of a fun one, but when you were like 17 or 18, were you like king of the hill in high school because you probably were always the source of beer at the parties?
Well, I was that's true. But I never felt as though I was king of the hill. Don't forget our company at that time was really struggling. So I never had that attitude, and I still don't. You know, we're up against some big competition, and I'm not afraid of them. We're just trying to steal a little piece of their business to keep ourselves alive and keep our people working.
And when were you most stressed in the business?
Probably when I was trying to get my father to build a warehouse so we could palletize the operation and operate efficiently.
Did you stop talking for a while or anything?
Well, we had a stressed relationship. But, you know, when you get a little older, you realize that, you know, you're asking him to spend money that he doesn't have. And I knew he didn't at that time. But I looked at it as a gamble, and that's what business is. It's a risk, and being in business is risky. You know, you're putting out a lot of money to do a lot of things in a brewery, and it's risky. But I have confidence in our products. I have confidence in our people that they'll sell our products, and I have confidence in the consumer that they'll like our products, and I see a great future for us.
Well, that's great. Dick Yuengling, thank you so much for spending the time to come on to my podcast. I know you're super busy, and it's a great beer. When I told people I was interviewing you, 100% of the people said, "Oh, I tell them I drink their beer." And that's from that's from Florida to Maine. So, people drink you.
That's very nice of you to say that, and I appreciate everybody's support, and I appreciate you calling me and having me on your show.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Dick. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Jim. Thank you. Bye-bye.
For more from James, check out the James Altucher Show on the Stansberry Radio Network at stansberryradio.com and get yourself on the free insiders list today.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.